You guys remember those nervous times we were talking about this morning? This is one of those. Joe and I were joking earlier, just kind of amongst ourselves, of how well he's hyped this sermon. All the publicity he's given it, and I appreciate that, but he's afraid he might have thrown me under the bus. And I hope that's not the case. This might actually be the most anticipated sermon so far of 2011. But I bet you're sitting there wondering what a 25-year-old youth minister with no kids knows about parenting. And I have to be honest with you, you're not the only one. I found myself with that question quite a bit on my mind this week. What exactly do I know about parenting, if anything, at all? And I'll have to confess to you that I have no idea what it is like to be a parent. And that's okay with me right now. I'm okay with not having kids in my life, at least kids of my own. At this point in time, the closest thing that I actually have to being a parent is these guys right here. So yes, that is Susanna's flower pot that he's laying in. Yes, I am still trying to grow grass in my backyard after the summer. And yes, they do both sleep in kennels inside the house because that's the only way that they'll be quiet at night so that we can get some sleep. They are absolutely a mess, and they drive me nuts. And while I may not have any kids of my own, I do consider the 50 or so kids in this youth group to be mine in some sense. Maybe not biologically, actually, but we do spend a lot of time together, and we do share a lot of our lives together. And that's something that's really, really special to me. Toddlers and teens have kind of been Susanna's and I's life for the last almost 2 years now. I can't believe it's been that long. And I have to admit that I really love these guys like they were my own kids. They're really special to me, and I'm so grateful for you guys. So as the proud parent of dysfunctional beagles, I humbly ask that you hang with me as we take a look at parenting through the eyes of your youth minister. And there's one thing that I think as we start that we need to go ahead and acknowledge, and that is this, that there is a huge generational gap. There is a huge gap between most of the people in this audience and what it meant to be a teenager for you and what it means to be a teenager for these people down here on the front row. It's just completely different. And I looked and looked for ways to illustrate this, and I hope that I found a good one. Bobby and I rehearsed this several times before we decided to show it to you. So we're going to show it to you, and if something goes wrong, please forgive us. So I want to illustrate it with this. This is a commercial that some of you might remember, but it definitely goes back to that generation. Let's see. You might have to rewind that all the way to the beginning. That looks good. All right, you got it twice in there. This is a commercial. We actually looked at this in class a couple of quarters ago. We were talking about advertising and just how it's changed over the years. And this is a commercial for Old Spice that some of you have probably seen, or you'll at least remember this style of commercial where the product was presented to you and then it actually presented you a little bit of information about the product. If you could go ahead and black that out, that'll make a little bit more sense in a minute. There we go. All right. You probably remember commercials like that where there was product information given to you, like what it was going to do, what it might cost. And now when we look at Old Spice commercials, I hope that you, I don't know if you've seen this recently or not, it has the guy, and their whole pitch is the man your man could smell like. All right? And then we have commercials for other types of body wash that tell you that it smells so good that angels will fall. And there's actually angels falling from heaven because the soap smells so good that it makes them fall. Or that also tell you that the cleaner you are, the dirtier you get. Okay? This is the kind of stuff that we're dealing with when we talk about a generational gap. There is a huge gap between the commercials that most of us will remember and the commercials that we see on our TVs today. The music is different from generations to generation. The TV is different now. You know, most of you all were lucky to have a television in your house. And now if it's not a half inch thick and have four colors in it instead of three, you don't have the latest and the greatest television anymore. The phones are different. No longer do you have party lines and all that kind of stuff. You've got it in your hand. School is different. The way that we go to school, the things that we learn at school are so completely different. And in several ways, even being in church is different. The places that we come from in our lives is so different from each other. And as parents and grandparents, you know, we're famous for several phrases, aren't we? Not the least of which is, well, when I was your age, that was my favorite. At which point, I and many other teenagers would roll my eyes and go, oh no, here we go again. And you've probably seen that look on your children's face or your grandchildren's face. But this gap, and I think that we probably need to call it what it is, it's like the Grand Canyon, isn't it? As far as the difference from generation to generation, even my generation is so much different from what you guys are experiencing right now. And as parents and grandparents, it's our challenge to bridge that gap, to have to bridge that huge canyon that it is, to be able to communicate with each other, because even the phrases, even the language is so different. We have to be able to interact with each other and be able to relate to each other on a personal level. And this is our challenge as parents, as grandparents, as ministers and youth ministers. And the thing is that you have to be intentional about bridging this gap. It's not something that just happens accidentally. You don't just fall into this sort of relationship. Any accident like this is usually more like a head-first crash down into the canyon, where there is all kinds of miscommunication and misunderstanding between parents and teenagers, isn't it? So we have to be intentional in this. And honestly, it's usually a one-way street, isn't it? It's usually parents trying to bridge that gap and not so much teens maybe trying to bridge that gap because they haven't been there. They don't know the things that you've experienced. So you know the way you grew up, and now you're observing the way that they're growing up. And so that makes it a one-way street, and that puts it on our shoulders as parents and as grandparents to be able to be there and to bridge that gap. And if you'll go ahead and unblack us here, this will make a little bit of sense. If you were to ask parents in the audience right now what you want most for your children or grandchildren, I bet that you would get a variety of responses. From the faces that I'm seeing, I can see several different ones. You know, we want our kids to be happy. Oh, we want our kids to be healthy. We want them to be educated. We really want them to have a better life than the life that I had when I was growing up, or even the life that we have now. We want what's best for our kids, and that is fantastic. Like, that's all good. But what I hope that we can agree on for the time being is that the most important thing for our young people, for your young people, is their spiritual health, their relationship with the Lord and Savior. And that is the relationship in their life that matters the most. It matters more than their friends. It matters more than boyfriends and girlfriends. That having a healthy relationship with God is first and foremost in their lives. And it's not enough as parents for us to feel like we've been successful if we're able to keep them out of drugs and sex throughout their teenage years. Now, you just don't find that idea in the Bible. That's not enough to consider yourself a successful parent. And with all of my heart, I believe that the most successful parents are the ones who make spiritual health a priority in their lives. So I want you to think ahead several years. When your children, your grandchildren are faced with spiritual crises, when major life decisions, when you go to college, you don't always have to go to church. You just don't always have to go to church. It's really easy to hit the snooze button or to just forget to set your alarm and sleep through Sunday morning. Do you move in with that boyfriend or girlfriend, or do you do what mom and dad said and not do that? Major life decisions that our young people are faced with, do you want them to make that decision based on because I said so, or because they're familiar with the Heavenly Father and His heart and they know what His will is for their lives? I mean, Jesus tells us that spiritual health revolves around two things, and we read that, we found that in our scripture reading, I think. Here in Mark chapter 12, he says to love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. The second most important commandment is this: love your neighbor as yourself. There is no other commandment more important than these two. And I love that Jesus is able to make things so simple, even to a lawyer. And sometimes lawyers have the gift of making things way too technical, way too involved. And Jesus puts it rather simply, doesn't he? The first thing that you need to do is to have a love for God that's based on everything you have, are, and will be. The second commandment, he says here, calls us to love others in the same way that Jesus loved us. The spiritual health of our children should be the number one priority in our lives. And I know that that's easier said than done, isn't it? Because culture sends such a different message nowadays through our TVs, through our advertisements, through our radios, through the internet. And they're sent in such a strong way, too. There's such appealing messages. But one thing that I want us to realize as parents is this, that even if we do everything right, if we put all of the emphasis that we can on this spiritual health, that doesn't guarantee, that there's no guarantee of spiritual health. Excuse me. And as parents, we can't beat ourselves up about that. No matter what we do, there's no guarantee that our kids are going to come out the way that we want them to. And we can't beat ourselves up about it, to be quite honest with you. We try as hard as we can. But we can't use it as an excuse either, to be lazy about it. It doesn't mean that you don't have to try, that you don't have to put some kind of effort into it. So I remember spending hours and hours with my dad when I was younger and just watching him and observing the way that he did things, the way that he worked. You know, after we started getting cows and working on the farm, the things that he did there, the way that he handled people, the way that he was at church. And I remember wanting to be just like my dad when I grew up. I'm sure that your childhood was probably fairly similar, wanting to be like your father or whoever was in your life, and your children's life is the same way. I mean, there's nothing more flattering to a parent than to hear their children say, "Daddy, I want to be just like you one day," is there? And as parents, you know, who desire our children to grow strong in their faith and to be able to handle the things that the world throws at them, we need to ask ourselves one important question, and I think that is this one right here. Should be our priority. Here we go. What kind of example are you setting as a parent? What kind of example am I to my children? Are you a spiritually healthy example for your children? Do they see you pray regularly? Are they there to witness you leaning on God when things get hard? Do they see you making God and a relationship with Him a priority in your life? Because you've got to be where you want your children to be, because they'll follow your example and end up in the exact same place where you are right now. That if God comes second for you, He's going to come second for your children and for your grandchildren. It's no mistake that children grow to look and act and think and be like their parents in so many ways, is it? I mean, the physical stuff is trans, transmitted to us through our genes. You know, it's no mistake that we look like our moms and dads. But the attitudes and values and behaviors are passed on by example. And this is especially true when it comes to faith development and spiritual type stuff. So parents and grandparents, what kind of example are we being? What kind of example are we giving to our children? What is most important in your life? Is it work? Are you a workaholic? Do you like to sleep in? Do you like to go to the lake? Do you put sports up there in front of God? Or is God up there in front of your life? What kind of example are we being as we try to bridge this gap? And one thing that we see parents do quite often, they try to buy their children's love, don't they? They try to give gifts. And we read a lot about giving gifts in the Bible, and we have to be honest with this. And as teenagers, it's really easy to be envious of all of the things that other kids have. As they've got so much more than I have, or they've got this, and I want it so bad. But there's always somebody that has better stuff than we do. Even if we have really good stuff, there's always somebody with better stuff. And as parents, we like to give them gift after gift after gift after gift after gift. And sometimes trying to buy their love, or at least what we think is their love, most of the time it turns a little bit backwards on us, doesn't it? But as parents, we have to make sure that we give good gifts. Those are the kind of gifts that we find reading in the Bible. It's not that God just gives gift after gift after gift, but God gives us the good gifts, the gifts that we need. And that's something that I really want you to take with you, hopefully, from this lesson, is the gifts that we give our parents or our children. You know, giving good gifts, not just on birthdays and at Christmas time, as important as those are. But we have to be able to give them good gifts through our actions. Teens need some of these things. They really need these things in their lives. And I didn't put any transitions in here. So here's kind of the list. Unconditional love. Things that teenagers need. First and foremost is unconditional love. The word love has been cheapened so much by our society. I mean, we love everything from hot dogs to hot rods, and I mean, you name it. But we have to demonstrate love for our children in our homes, between our husbands, between moms and dads, between parents and grandparents. We have to demonstrate this love in our homes. Kids are going to mess up, and that's okay. Stuff happens. But what I remember most when I would mess up is when my dad would set me down on my bed, and we'd have a long talk about it. And he'd say, "Son, I remember doing the same things that you're doing right now. I remember being there and doing that and having that same temptation." There was nothing more meaningful to me than that conversation with my dad. It wasn't him getting on to me for anything. It wasn't him punishing me for anything. It was, "Son, I know where you are. I know where you're coming from." And that's so important for us, because this is the unconditional type of love. There is no condition for the love of between a parent and a child, between grandparents and grandkids. There is no condition on that. A lot of times, you know, people will ask if your kids are ever unlovable, and if I were to ask that question, there might be a few hands go up tonight, and I hope that that's not the case. But our children need love all of the time. They need it to be unconditional, because when they mess up, they don't need you to hang them out to dry. They already feel bad enough about the things that they're doing. They need you to be there to lift them up with that unconditional love. They need your time as well. Sometimes we get so wrapped up in work, in making the money, and that's certainly something that I probably worry too much about. Susanna will tell you that. Worrying about, man, are we going to have enough money to get by? And that's a legitimate fear sometimes, but we get so wrapped up in work and being that workaholic. Sometimes we even just get wrapped up in living our own lives, like we weren't quite done living our own lives, doing our own thing before we had children. And so after we have children, you know, we're still trying to live those years out, to get done everything that we wanted to get done. Sometimes we even put others first. So this is kind of a danger for ministers, I think. We get so wrapped up in jobs and taking care of things at work and things with other people that we do that to the neglect of our own families sometimes. But they need your time. The important thing for us to learn is to spend quality time with each and every member of our family. They need that. Children need that. I mean, toddlers to teenagers need you to put the time in with Him. They also need your attention. This goes along with the time really well. They need you to be at games. They need you to be at school functions, at the Valentine's parties, at the Halloween parties. And they're not Halloween parties anymore, are they? What are they? Fall festivals or something like that? They need you to be at stuff like that because having that time, having that attention given to them is so important. So it's important for us sometimes to put down the newspaper or to put down, and it's probably not the newspaper anymore, to put the cell phone away, to put the laptop away, to turn the computer off for the night, and just give attention to the people that are around us. You know, leave the housework to another day and give your family your attention. Not only attention, but they also need boundaries. And this is probably one of the toughest ones for a lot of us, that they need rules. You've got to have rules in your family. You've got to have rules in your life. You have to learn right and wrong somehow, don't you? And the family is the perfect way to do that. Because as a little child, you start out and your boundaries are really, really small. And as you prove yourself responsible to your parents, as you're learning that right and wrong, you see your boundaries slowly start to expand. You're given new types of responsibilities and new opportunities to handle life. You earn more freedom. One writer wrote this, when supportive, caring parents don't have clear rules and consequences, teens are more likely to engage in risky behaviors. Households with hands-on parenting have teens that are at half the average risk of all teens of engaging in risky behavior. I mean, half the average, that's incredible, isn't it? But parents who take a hands-off approach have children that are 4 times more likely than the national average to engage in risky behaviors. The numbers are astounding, aren't they, sometimes? But we need boundaries. We need to know, we need that set of rules. We need to know how to function within those rules. We need to learn how to function in society, and boundaries within a family is such a good place, is the perfect place for that. I've read that parenting sometimes, especially parenting teenagers, compared to trying to hold on to a wet bar of soap, if you've ever tried to do that. If you hold on too tight, it slips out of your, it just squirts out of your hand and you can't catch it. If you hold on to it too loose, it slips out of your hand. Somehow you've got to find that balance, that firm grip that it's not going to slide out of your hand, that it's still there. We've got to have boundaries. Another thing that we have to have, consistent discipline. And this is probably what kids need more than anything, is this consistent discipline. Excuse me, not need than anything. But they need to know more than anything that mom and dad are going to follow through on the threats. If you've ever been in the restaurant and you hear you've been seated next to the family, there is the child that's acting up. He kind of gets around. He's in a lot of different restaurants sometimes, all at the same time. And he's sitting there and he's acting up and he's causing a scene and he's making noise and he's really being obnoxious. And you hear mom and dad, "Do you want me to spank you? Do you want me to spank you? Do you want me to spank you?" And finally, the threat comes out. "If you don't stop, I'm going to break your leg." All right? I've heard it from parents, okay? This is the threat. And all the while, the child is sitting there going, "Yeah, whatever." They know that it's not going to happen. Children need consistent discipline in their lives. They need someone there to encourage the good behavior and to correct the bad behavior. They need that consistent discipline in their lives. The last thing here on this list is your ears. You need to give them your ears. They need someone to listen to them so much. You guys have so much to say sometimes. Parents and grandparents, as much time as it might take sometimes, you need to be able to sit there and be willing to listen to everything that they have to say and not just blow it off as something silly or man, they just don't know what they're talking about. These guys are incredibly smart, incredibly deep thinkers. And when they ask questions, they're really good questions. And a lot of times you're not going to know the answer to it. You're just going to sit there going, "Man, I don't know. I don't know. I'm going to have to look for that one." But take the time. Take the time to give these gifts. They're so, so important. But there is one gift that's not on this list, and I think that honestly this is probably the biggest one out there. Gifts that you need to give is to let them know that you're human. give them yourself. They need the gift of you. Your willingness to make mistakes, to let them know that, hey, you mess up too. To admit your mistakes to them. And for some reason, we've gotten into this habit of, well, if we just ignore them and act like they never happened, they'll just go away. And it's like it never happened. The biggest thing that we can do is to give them ourselves, to make those mistakes and to admit those mistakes. Eugene Peterson writes this to us. He says, a parent's main job is not to be a parent, but to be a person. There are no techniques to master that will make a good parent. There's no book to read that will give all the right answers. The parent's main task is to be vulnerable in a living demonstration that adulthood is full, alive, and Christian. They need to see you as a parent, as a grandparent, living your life, being that good Christian example that you want them to see, being that pattern for them to follow, being real and being honest with them, letting them know that no one gets it right as hard as we try. When my kids look at me, are they learning what it means to love God with all their hearts, souls, minds, and strengths? Do they see me trusting God for guidance and wisdom as I plan the future, as I run my business, or as I manage my home? Do they see me turning to God when I'm anxious, troubled, or ill? Do they see me living out my commitment to Christ by spending time reading and studying the Bible? Do they know that prayer is an important part of my life? Are they learning what it means to carry the cross and live the life of a Christian? And live the life of Christian discipleship? Are they learning that God is the source of all that they are and have, including the gift of salvation? And we could go on and on and on in this list of questions. But our children, first and foremost, need you. They need all of these gifts. They need you to be a part of their lives. Youth ministry, believe it or not, is not a cure-all. I don't have all the answers to parenting, quite obviously. I can't. There's just some things I can't do. Youth ministry, believe it or not, starts at home. It needs parents to give instructions and sometimes a little shove out the door in self-confidence. And I'm so thankful to the many parents here who help make my job so much easier. Because there are a lot of horror stories out there when it comes to youth ministry and some of the children that some of my friends in this job have to deal with. And I'm so grateful that I don't have to deal with that here. Children's, teenagers, toddlers, and beagles alike need their parents to be real, to be active, and to be involved in their lives. They need to see you for who you are. They need your time. They need your attention. They need that unconditional love. They need everything that you are wrapped up into that one package. So for what it's worth, that's the parenting advice from a youth minister with no children tonight. I know we haven't exactly been talking about the gospel, but I think this is something that's really important to us in our lives. And as we close here, I'd just like to remind you that the invitation is open to anyone who might need it if you would come as we stand and sing.